Hey everyone, welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I write for the Chicago Reader, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
And my name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I, too, am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics.
Yeah!
Woo-hoo! Woo-woo!
I'm trying to get different oomph into it. Than,
different vibes, know. Different energies.
Yeah, I think last week was a yowza, you know, I don't know. hey, we got movies! As per usual. But before we get to what's on ye old regular show, we want to direct you over to our Patreon because this week we covered a patron's choice. That's right. One of our dear patrons selected a movie for us to watch and we watched the shit out of it. And it's She's All That, the 1999 teen rom-com starring Rachel Lee Cook and Freddie Prinze Jr. So we want to say thank you to that patron.
Thank you, patron.
And also, thank you, patron. So please, if you're not a patron, go check that out. Become a patron, et cetera, et cetera. It's delightful. We have so much fun. Yay! Woo-hoo. Over on that part of the show. Mm-hmm. And speaking of patrons, we want to go ahead and thank our sponsor piece patron, Heather Sachs. Thank you, Heather, for being a sponsor piece patron. It's delightful to have you.
Thanks, Heather. And while we're doing shout-outs, want to say a huge thank you to the podcast app Pocket Casts, who recently included our show in their list, Movie Magic. So if you're a Pocket Cast person... Hello. Nice to meet you. And so, yeah, we're definitely a good company with some other film podcasts, so check them out as well.
Yes, that's right. Evan put it much better than I ever could, mostly because I don't know how to think. But also...
ouch.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me. You know, synapses don't fire very easily up here sometimes. But that being said, I do know which movies we're talking about tonight. We're going to be talking about the Norwegian... For some reason, it's Norwegian horror film. Is it really a horror film? Leave. And we're also going to be talking about the Boston Strangler. But before we do that, we're going to give you some of our thoughts on the Oscars, not Oscars past, but the most recent one, Oscars 2023, honoring films from 2022. I didn't watch the Oscars this year, although I do know who won. But I think that Evan and Megan probably are a little bit better informed than I am. I'm actually very informed, but I want them to go first.
No, if you caught that, listeners, all that whispering.
That ASMR.
Yeah. Well, that's what I do best is ASMR movie reviews. I'm actually launching a second podcast. It's called Spoiler Piece ASMR. Premiering April 17th.
That's a spinoff of the Patreon feed.
Right. It's not premiering. I'm not going to do it. Anyway. Okay. Well, general impressions, yays, nays, boogities, what do we think?
I was very excited for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I love that movie. It's in my top 10. I know you guys talked about it when I was on vacation last year, and you had a great conversation, but I'm bummed that I didn't get to talk about it with you guys because I love it so much. But yeah, very excited for all the love it received. Surprised in some ways that it got, you know, best director, best screenwriting, which is great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was nice. It was lovely to see Michelle Yeoh win. It was so delightful, even though I was not surprised. It was so delightful to see Ke Huy Quan win because he's just so, that was my favorite supporting performance of the year. And so it was great to see that. And he's just so lovely in all of his speeches. And Dave, you said this off mic talking about how it was great to see Harrison Ford and he once again, you know, hug and connect. And that was lovely. And Steven Spielberg was so excited. Like the whole thing was just so lovely. I was also so excited for Sarah Polley to win for best screenplay for Women Talking. Yeah. I wish that had been nominated for far more things, especially acting, same. Because it's such a great film. It's so wonderful. But I was delighted that she won. And I loved her speech that she's like, you know, hey, glad Academy, you weren't put off by the words Women in Talking in the same title, because apparently that's so off-putting to far too many people. But I was kind of surprised that there wasn't more political commentary this year, just because there usually is. But I will say that was some political commentary. And of course, when Navalny, which is a great documentary, when that won, there was obviously commentary on that and the human rights atrocities happening in Russia. But of course, I also loved when one of the Daniels said, talking about drag, and drag harms no one. And I was like, damn right. That is great and much needed. Yeah. So overall, I was not surprised, but still a lovely ceremony. The only thing I was really disappointed by, and I feel torn about it because I couldn't even get through The Whale because it's such a fatphobic and appalling film. But Brendan Fraser is a lovely person. And I was very torn because I'm like, I felt like an awful movie, but he is a very talented actor and he had such a lovely reaction to winning. So I felt torn.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seemed genuinely surprised and moved.
Yes,
he was very moved. And you could tell he was very nervous up there and he was just doing his best to kind of hold it all together. I haven't seen The Whale, but I've heard many a thing about its problematic nature. I really love Brendan Fraser and I almost wish that he had won it for something else because it just felt, so uncomfortable.
School ties.
Yeah. I felt just so uncomfortable that he won for this movie and that, especially because a lot of his speech was like whale and sea puns. And I'm like, I just felt very uncomfortable with the whole thing. Yeah. So I really wish that he had won for something else. I'm happy for him that he won this, but really wish it was for a different movie.
Could not agree with you more, Evan. And what's so ridiculous about The Whale is that there's so much Moby Dick embedded into that film in just the small parts I saw. And I'm like, really, really, this is what we're going to do. We're leaning into, you know, fat phobic names and trying to make it seem like it's Herman Melville. Okay, whatever. But yes, in my mind, he won for something else, you know,
for one of his many other fine performances.
Yes. But I'm so thrilled to see him, you know, acting again. And I hope that this rejuvenates his career and he has, you know, much more longevity.
Yeah, same. And I hope the same for Kei-Hee Kwan because, you know, I really hope that he gave such a moving speech about his humble origins and this being, you know, the American dream for him. And I've just heard, you know, horror stories of people who have won Oscars and, you know, their careers haven't gone further. They've ended up broke and without insurance, even though they won an Oscar. And so I just hope for the both of them that their careers continue on an upward trajectory. And this isn't just, you know, a peak before another valley.
Absolutely. I could not agree more.
Yeah. By the way, like I said, I didn't watch the show, but I did watch everybody's reactions when they won. And my favorite was seeing Jamie Lee Curtis clearly say, "Shut up," when her name was announced. Which I thought was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Also, a little disappointed she didn't thank John Carpenter, but okay, whatever. It's fine. We don't do things sometimes. But
you're right, but she did at least acknowledge her genre
films.
Her heritage and genre, which I love, you know. Yeah.
So. She has said many times that she owes her entire career to John Carpenter, so I don't fault her for not saying that. Yeah. It's just kind of being a jerk.
No, but I think it's interesting, especially I think she's fascinating too, just because of the whole Nepo baby conversation that's happening, especially after the New York Magazine article that came out and she kind of, you know, rebuffed being called a Nepo baby. And I'm like, well, no, you are, you know, your parents were Janet Leigh and Tony Curtis. Like you are Hollywood royalty, whether you want to admit it or not. And you have, everyone has a leg up if they, you know, have a parent or family member in the business. But what I will say is it is really interesting thinking about how long her career is and has been, and so much of it has been in horror and other, you know, genre films. And so it is, and the fact that this is a major, you know, sci-fi action genre film and it won so many awards. And also, you know, with Asian leads, Asian American leads, with, you know, a queer character who is Asian American and the whole point of the film is her connecting with her mom, like in acceptance, like, it's just so lovely. Anyway, but yes,
it is.
All of it is lovely. I love all the love that film is getting. It's well deserved.
Same. Yeah, I was very happy it won Best Picture and it won all the awards that it did. As a fellow Emerson alum, I was very excited that the Daniels won for Best Director.
Nice.
I mean, also when you're, you know, at this, when you've gone to school together around the same time, because we were at Emerson around the same time, makes you feel like a real underachiever to know people have gone to school with people who end up winning Best Director at the Oscars. I was very happy for them. I was very happy for all the love that the movie got. I think the only thing that I was a little bit bummed about is I was really hoping Angela Bassett would win Best Supporting Actress. As much as I loved Stephanie Hsu and Jamie Lee Curtis's performances in Everything Everywhere, I was really pulling for Angela Bassett because I just think she was incredible in Black Panther, and I really wanted her to win.
Yeah, she was excellent in that. My favorite was Stephanie Hsu. In that category. But yeah, I agree with you. And it is, I hate the argument, like, as far as like, well, they, you know, they deserve their win. You know, it's been long enough and they haven't won. And I'm like, no, it really should be about the best performance. But arguably, it's not. It's about the campaigning. It's about, you know, so often Black women don't get acknowledged. Black men don't get acknowledged, but especially Black women don't get acknowledged for their work in film when they do finally get opportunities. So I feel like she should have won before. Like, it's still kind of shocking to me that she hasn't already had an Oscar. So, and considering that performance is so fantastic in Black Panther, it is, I agree with, even though it wasn't my pick, I also agree with you. Like, it would have been lovely to have seen her win.
Yeah. And, you know, for as much strides as we make in more representation, it's still staggering. Some of the stats that came out of this Oscars between, you know, Ruth E. Carter being the first Black woman to win two Oscars. Yes. Holy shit. How has that not happened before? And Michelle Yeoh being, was she the first Asian woman to win a Best Actress?
So it depends, because Merle Oberon also won an Oscar, like, back in like the 50s, and she was an Asian American woman, but she hid her identity so she could get roles. But yes, Michelle Yeoh is like the first like out Asian woman. Yeah. Which it's is just appalling.
It is appalling. It's 2023. Yep. This was the 95th Oscars. How is this? How are these stats?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's gross. Like, when you start looking at, when you look at it, like the women who, like, directors and writers who won, and the numbers are appalling. When you look at, you know, Black actors and Black actresses, the numbers are appalling. And then when you start looking at other, you know, people of color, it's appalling how few have been awarded and won. And yeah, I'm basically just saying everything you've just said.
Yeah, I mean, not to be a downer. I just was like hearing some of those stats afterwards, and I was like, oh my God, we need to keep doing way better than this.
I mean, you're both right. So,
I mean, I do think that making the Academy more inclusive has helped tremendously, considering if you look over the past 5 years, the films that have been nominated and awarded. So it's happening, but it's happening so slowly. And it's just,
but I think there's a lot of the old bullshit guard going on there. Cause I don't know if either of you ever reads the, can't remember which outlet does it. If it's Entertainment Tonight or Entertainment Weekly, it's something with an entertainment. They do like the secret.
Oh yes.
Like four people. Yep. And you had, I don't know who the actor was who was like, but claims to be, they say in the thing, award-winning, long career, highly respected, and he claims to be, you know, this liberal thing, and then he's bitching about wokeness. You know, just go fucking sit on an umbrella and open it, okay? I mean, just what a fucking horrible, just out him. Let him never work again, you know?
I would love that.
I just can't stand that shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is part of the reason I didn't really want to talk about the Oscars so much, because I knew I was just going to get mad. So,
I mean, that's fair. That is fair. I know it's tough, because I love the Oscars, because I love the pomp and ceremony. I love it's, you know, it's so many people talk about it. It's like, oh, if you're a movie lover, it's like the Super Bowl. You know, it is such an exciting time, but then it's also frustrating because when you know these behind the scenes things and when you know the stats, it's mm-hmm. it's just, it's extremely frustrating. And, you know, we're frustrated and we're all white. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't even imagine how frustrating and awful it must be to be a person of color, to be a disabled person, to be a trans person, you know, and to see these stats and how just awful they are. But yeah, that person, I read that. I read that in Entertainment Weekly too. And that was appalling. The comments they made, that person made, like, about like Danielle.
I'm so sick of Viola Davis's like snotty crying thing.
And talking like, about Danielle Deadwyler. And like, it was just awful. Like, just awful. So awful. Yeah. So it's racist. So awful. So sexist. Like, yeah, it was gross. So gross.
Well, just, you know, just to remind everybody, that's how a lot of white people think when they think that their secret's not going to get out. So should we move on to happier things than what we already know?
Yeah, know. Perhaps.
Actually, I don't know how much happier talking about Leave or the Boston Strangler is going to be, because I don't know how either of you feels about either of those movies. So let's move on then to our first movie of Ye Old Night here on Spoiler Piece Theater. I say night because we record at night, though you may be listening at any time. Because that's the magic
probably
of
Friday morning.
So the first movie we're talking about is Leave, directed by and yes, just in case you're wondering, it's two different words, but it's called Leave, L-E-A-V-E. It's directed by Alex Herron. It is written by Thomas Mulderstad. It is starring a German playing an American who still has an accent. And here's your, I'm going to read the Letterboxd thing here instead of going the IMDb route.
Ooh, I love it. You're mixing it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Now this is directly from the poster. Her heritage is haunting her. That's a lot of alliteration. And then here's the summary. A young woman tries to find her origins after having been abandoned as an infant at a cemetery wrapped in a cloth with satanic symbols. But as she gets closer to answers, a malevolent spirit is telling her to leave. That is... that's misdirection on purpose, because the spirit is not malevolent, but the spirit is actually trying to tell her, hey, I think it is trying to tell her leave, or tell her, no, come over here and help this one leave.
Yes.
And also your name is Leave, because
your
it's
name
Norway.
Is Leave. Yes.
Yeah. L-I-V, Leave.
It works on a lot of levels, but it does. Funny enough, that was also the same plot summary. It's on IMDb.
Oh.
Oh, was it? Oh, well, okay. Can't win them all. So
you tried, Dave. You tried. You tried.
I did try. So anyway, I'm getting the impression, just based on conversations we had off mic, that I might be the one who enjoyed this more than the other two members of Spoiler Piece Theater. I kind of had fun with this.
No.
Do tell.
I enjoyed it as well.
You thought it was okay, Megan?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
No, yeah, I did not like this at all. At all.
I mean, I thought this was too slow, and I thought that it wasn't scary at all. But I did kind of appreciate the whole, like, let's do Norwegian black metal and things like that. But I figured out pretty quickly that I was like, well, this isn't actually about Satanism, because... Nope. This is just misdirection, because it was a Norwegian death metal band. And that's just, these are symbols of Norwegian death metal. If you know anything about music, then you know that. Or I should say, if you know anything about metal, you know that. Not necessarily anything about, I don't know if a classical musician is going to know that. But basically the story is this baby is left in a cemetery. It's found by a police officer. The baby is adopted and is raised to be a young mid-20s, strangely German-accented young woman raised by a black family in the Boston area. And her mother tells her before her mother dies, hey, we found you in a cemetery. Well, obviously you knew you were adopted, but also we found you in a cemetery wrapped in satanic imagery. And she's like, what? And so she goes to, instead of going to like start her graduate degree at Georgetown, like she's supposed to, she goes to Norway to find her birth parents, and she finds mystery, Satanism, intrigue. And as it turns out, as there seems to be a thread in lots of movies that have Scandinavia as a major plot point, that there's evil waiting in the wings. And the evil in this sense is that a bunch of religious zealots think all the women in their family are evil, and so they try to kill them.
Yeah, or yeah. keep them trapped in their basement, locked away.
Right. Yeah, they couldn't get the evil out of Leave, so they burn her to death, different Leave. And so they can, they think, get the evil out of Anna, so they just keep burning her every chance they get. And I'm assuming some other gross stuff that I don't necessarily want to get into, but we're going to go SA. Let's just say that. And but they think they can get the evil out of her, but then Leave, whose name is, what's her name? Her American name?
Hunter, I thought.
Hmm? Hunter. That's right. That's her. Yeah. Interesting that that's her name, by the way. Her name's Hunter. Okay. And she's on a quest. Interesting. Anyway, she finds the birth family and they seem nice, but also kind of weird. And the moment right. the grandfather figure shows up on screen, you're getting like, I got like major Max von Sydow in evil mode vibes.
Yeah, definite red flag.
yeah. yeah. I was like, wait a minute. This guy's very, very tall. He's yep. A self-proclaimed Christian and is asking her about her Christian faith. And right. the first thing praying I thought when he said, yeah, was, first thing I thought was, run. But,
you know. Right. Yeah. And not the like quick prayer before dinner, the speed prayer. He's the like lock hands and have bow our heads and be quiet for a long time prayer before dinner kind of person.
Yeah. He's so obviously evil that when Hunter asks, you know, what the meat is they're having for dinner and he says, deer, I almost expected him to be like, you know, like infant heart, you know, I mean, just like, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, I kind of like, I did like this. I think it's about 15 minutes too long. Like I said, I don't think it's scary. And even though Hunter is very clearly played by a German woman, I thought her performance was actually fine. It was just the accent that didn't match up. I think she had the right, like, skittishness, you know, a very similar skittishness that she had in, what's the tank movie
Fury.
With Logan Lerman? Fury. Because I was like, I think mm-hmm. that's the woman from Fury. And then I looked and it was. And yeah, so I just liked her performance. I thought the guy who played, I guess, her cousin was a fucking horrific creep, which is the point of his character. But I think right. I think that he did it really well, although I'm not really sure it should have been so overt. Like,
oh
maybe
God.
More of a secret creep, you know? Like, let's...
Right. Dial it back just a little bit.
Yeah, it's like everything's at 100% with that guy from the moment he shows up on screen.
Yes.
And I would have liked some evil from her great aunt, but she just seems to be like the clueless wonder in all of this, I guess. I don't know.
yeah.
It's like, how do you
seems
know
like
that
she's
like
willfully ignorant?
Yeah. How do you not know stuff? That like your husband is evil and his father is evil and like your daughter who disappeared was burned alive in a church on your own property? Whatever. And I kind of like the fact that the reason for their zealotry is never explained. It's just, they're zealots,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just kind of like, yeah. we're evil in the guise of being Christians. And that is all you need to know. By the way, I think your hair is going to burn too. Cause you know, everything burns, but hair goes first. So anyway, Megan, you didn't like it though.
I did not.
I would love to know why.
So I like the prep, like it's funny listening to you talk about the movie. I'm like, wow, that sounds like a much better movie, even though that is everything that happens in this movie.
that's what I do.
Yeah.
I make movies sound
you
better.
You do. You make it sound good. But yeah, like that's like, so the premise is a good premise. It's an interesting one. It's intriguing. And, mm-hmm. you know, the thought of these incredibly creepy misogynist men who are killing and burning and assaulting the women in their family. I mean, it's horrifying, of course, but it's an interesting premise. But yeah, I had issues with this. I found this incredibly tedious. I didn't care about anything, anyone. I think the lead actress is fine. Like, I think she's doing an okay job, but it wasn't captivating enough for me to really be drawn in. And it really was off-putting to me, the creepy cousin. Did we really need a rape scene or an attempted rape scene? Did we really need that? Because we already know mm-hmm. he's a flaming creep. Like, he right. is just a full-on asshole, and he's horrid from the start. We didn't need that. And so, and you're right, Dave, you know, you're talking about how you were setting it up, like talking about how the woman who's in the basement is being burned and there's other awful things happening to her. And it's definitely an allusion to sexual assault. And it's like, do we really need this? Like, can't they just be like, isn't the fact that they're being burned awful enough? Like, why are
that's
we
pretty awful? Yeah. Well, and chained for and 30 chained. Years. Hunter's like 25. Right. So chained for 25
we've got
years.
Chained. We've got mm-hmm. burned. We've got murdered. Yeah. Like, do we need to add rape to like, it just, it, I found it very distasteful and very off-putting. It's gross for me.
It yeah, just, it's pretty gross.
Yeah. I mean, of course it's gross, like in the context of the film, obviously.
Right.
But I found it as a woman watching this, it bothered me on top of everything else. So.
It feels kind of extraneously gross.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. It did. It didn't feel needed. And it doesn't feel like it's making necessarily a commentary on rape culture or assault. It just feels gratuitous. And that was my problem mm-hmm. with this.
And there was also, now, this is not what actually happens in the movie, because I think that things would have run very differently for the last 10 minutes, but it's the way it's filmed, it seemed to me a choice to make the brand that Hunter is getting, the fire brand, she's getting burned, basically. Mm-hmm. It seemed, she's clearly being burned on the ankle, like, but it's made to look like she might be being burned in,
yeah.
Really, really horrific places?
Yeah, it's a phallic brand. Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
Not just that, yeah. but the way they shoot it from yes. kind of like behind and to the side, I think you're supposed to think as an audience member for a moment, wait, is he doing what I think he's doing? And he's not, because I think I'm just going to go with any director or actor would have been like, I think the reaction needs to be even bigger if we're going to do that fucking horrible thing. But it's also just seemed kind of cheap and like, hee-hee, we might be doing this. It's like, we already understand, okay? Just show the close-up of branding her ankle. That's enough. We get the idea, you know? You're not being clever. You're being kind of gross.
Yes.
You know?
Agreed. Yes, I could okay. not agree more.
I mean, I thought. I mean, the way it looked to me, it looked like he was burning her on the inside of her leg, like the upper inside yeah, part of her thigh. Right. I didn't realize that it was hitting her ankle. I didn't remember seeing it go that low.
It just, seemed to me when that cut back to like sort of not Taylor. Taylor. Why do I keep calling her Taylor? Hunter is not her POV, but like a, kind of an angle on her. It seems like it seems low. Like the whole, it seems like she's looking the way the shot is angled, like she's looking lower than that. And that may be an accident of where, you know, she was told to look or where she did look, or maybe she wasn't given direction. I don't know. So maybe she was being burned on the thigh and it was just made so haphazardly. I didn't realize it, but I don't know. Just I found the whole, like once we got to, you know, once she gets inside that room that, you know, is locked mysteriously. I would love to know where she found that key, I guess from the ghost of Leave. But once she gets to, you know, it's just like you go in there and you're like, all right, she's going to, and you just know she's going to find like a person in there because we've seen movies. And also I just saw Insidious 4 the other day. So
I have not seen it.
Well, that they don't really... Actually, no, that is the plot. They do find a person in there. In one scene, they find a ghost. In another one, they find like a person. Anyway, that's another story for another time. I was just thinking to myself, like once we got to that part, I just was like, all right, well, now we're going to find. I didn't know who they were going to find, but I knew she was going to find. I knew Grandpa was evil like a long time ago. And I knew that she was going to find a person in there. I didn't know what it all meant, but I knew that's what was going on. It took me a while to realize that the spirit of Leave was trying to aid her or point her in the right direction rather than, you know, kill her. So, I don't know. I kind of liked this, but I do see why it wouldn't work for you, Megan. Evan, it seemed like it worked for you, though.
It did work for me. I think because I felt like it had a relatively like narrow scope. I didn't feel like it was trying to go too all over the place. I liked the misdirection in the beginning about the satanic blanket that she's found wrapped in, and the what they think is the satanic cross. I think they later they say, "Oh, that's just a Norse cross."
Yes.
Yeah.
So I liked that misdirection at the beginning, and I like that this was a movie about someone exploring their roots and finding good reasons why she was abandoned at that cemetery, and they're not because of weird cultish satanic reasons. They're because of weird cultish religious Christian reasons.
Yeah.
And I just thought that the grandpa was just so evil. And like you, Dave, I appreciated that they didn't do a lot of explanation. He was just a creepy, gross religious guy, and there wasn't some whole crazy backstory with regard to why he was so religious. He just was, and was terrible to all the women in the family. And I also liked the misdirection initially, because you think her mom is dead. You think the mom is the one that was burned up in the church, because right. they said her dad did it, and he's been locked away in a mental facility
by choice after he by did choice his time.
For all this time. And, you know, so we find out later, no, that wasn't her mom that died. It was her aunt that died in the fire. The mom's been locked up. So I thought that was a good misdirection. And then I liked that the dad checked himself out of the mental health facility and came to try to rescue them with a hammer.
Yeah. And got himself stabbed to death in the interim.
Yeah.
Poor guy. That's what happens when you marry, you know, or have a relationship with a religious zealot's daughter who, you know, is going to kill you all. He does end up killing you all after you've spent 25 years in a mental institution. Oh, God.
Yikes.
What a horrible way to go. Oh, poor Christian really got the shit end of the stick.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, they all did, but I also love the fact that his name was Christian, which means the same thing in Norwegian as it does in English. Otherwise, leave and leave do not. So I do not understand the casting of Alicia von Rittberg, but I think she was fine, accent aside. I just can't imagine why you would do... The puzzling thing to me is, though, why you would do that. There have to be American actors who would have done this part and done it well, who you could have cast. Maybe she's a bigger name in Europe, and I don't know. It's strange to me. I don't understand these things. What I'm saying is Norwegians are weird. That's what I'm saying. Oh. I'm not saying that.
That's quite the leap.
I'm not, no. Because, you know, because the movie's Norwegian and it's an unusual choice, so I said that just to be provocative. I don't really mean that. Or do I? No.
Dun, dun, dun.
I do like the fact, though, that this was shot in Bergen, very clearly, because I know I'm in Norway a little bit. I have a friend from Bergen, and we were emailing about it, and she's like, yeah, that was shot in Bergen like 2 years ago. I was like, oh, no kidding. That's the only reason I know that. So, yeah. Any other thoughts on Leave?
I wish I'd liked it more. And all I could think about is the entire time in preparation for this episode is the JoJo song. Get out, leave right now. It's the end of you and me. Anyway, so that song is now burned in my brain for a while.
That's funny.
What I kept thinking was, I wish they had called this movie Leave, Leave. L-E-A-V-E-L-I-V.
Leave, Leave.
Leave,
Leave. Yeah. Nice. But they didn't call it that, so.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, can't win them all.
I will say, oh, one more thing. I do kind of like the, again, back to the premise and how I like the ideas here. I like the idea of a ghost trying to help and not be.
Rather than hinder.
Exactly. Like, it kind of reminded me of the horror movie we covered a while ago, The Power in the Hospital. And it's like.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That, I really did like that too.
Yeah.
I liked the premise that the ghost was the helpful ghost.
Yes.
There was two things. One, I was laughing because almost immediately when we were watching this, Sean, I was like, the blanket and the cross, those are misdirections. this is like, this is not even going to be relevant. She knew right away. But then the other thing is, one thing I did find spooky in this movie was the scene where the ghost was in the hallway and the doors were slamming. With each door slammed, the ghost was closer and closer down the hallway. That did creep me out. That was the one thing that I actually found spooky in this movie.
You know why I think I didn't find the ghost spooky? Is because the ghost reminded me of the weird, I don't even know what it is. I haven't seen Mulholland Drive in a long time, but it reminded me of the figure that What's-His-Face finds behind the dumpster at the diner. So I was just like, oh, it's a reference to Mulholland Drive. That's what I was thinking.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Were you going to say something, Megan?
I was going to say, speaking of spooky parts, that's a good one, Evan. The one part I thought that was a little like, ooh, was when she's lying in bed and you see the ghost like kind of like creeping over.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know what I thought was even creepier in that same scene? When the pillow that she hasn't been sleeping on, like the impression on the pillow moves as if the ghost was there and then sat up.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah, that was good. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah. That was good. Yeah, you're right. The hand creeping over her when she's laying facing away from. Oh yeah, that got me too. That was another spooky moment.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I know. I criticized the movie and said I didn't like it, but I do liked those moments. Those were good.
Mm-hmm. I also appreciated how even after Leave found her mother, that the ghost was still helping them out in like the remains of the old church. It was kind of, the ghost was like, "Come this way."
Yeah.
That's, you know. And then when she whacked Grandpa over the head, when Hunter whacked Grandpa over the head, the ghost is like, meh. And then, I mean, not really. But she faded off. Her work was done. Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciated that.
Now she can.
Because, you know, you got to give him like, hey, her purpose has been served. It's just like, you know, Affleck in the Sheet ghost movie, when he finds a little strip of paper in the wall, he disappears.
Oh, anyway. Ghost Story. That is such a good movie.
Yeah. Best ghost movie ever with Sheets, aside from Charlie Brown. So that was Leave. Any final thoughts on Leave?
No.
This movie is always going to be called Leave to me from now on. Okay. So last movie of the evening is, you know, I've seen it written as The Boston Strangler and Boston Strangler, but apparently it's just called Boston Strangler. And this is starring Keira Knightley and Carrie Coon and Chris Cooper. And unfortunately, I am going to do the IMDb summary here. Loretta McLaughlin was the reporter who first connected the murders and broke the story of the Boston Strangler. She and Jean Cole challenged the sexism of the early 1960s to report on the city's most notorious serial killer, written and directed by Matt Ruskin, starring whom I already mentioned. And what do we think? I got the feeling off mic that we might have had some diverging opinions on this one. Evan, why don't you begin?
Sure. I'll just preface this by saying I know someone who is in this movie. A friend of mine from college, Mike Bash, is in the scene from this. So when I was in the middle of watching it, I kind of freaked out because I didn't know he was in it. I was like, oh my God, Mike, you're in this movie. He's in the scene where I think they're shooting like a dramatization of the confession. And he's the guy who's in the scene doing the confession. Like, oh, I killed all those people.
Oh, that's like a real part.
Yeah.
I thought you were just like, there's just some extra that you knew, but this is a person who acted in this movie. Like, acting.
Wow, very cool.
Congratulations to your pal, Mike.
Yeah. So I was psyched to see him. And I'm always psyched to see a movie that takes place in Boston.
And was obviously very clearly shot here, too.
Yes.
Which is nice.
I always like to see movies actually shot here and featuring local actors. Chris Cooper, looking at you.
And what's his face? I'm sorry. Like, and what's his face?
No, go ahead.
Alessandro Nivola or whatever Nivola. Apparently he's from Boston, too, which I didn't realize.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He does a good accent.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good accent.
I was like, that's the best Boston accent in this movie.
It is. And I respect that Keira Knightley's character does not have, she's an American accent, but she does not attempt a Boston
accent. Yeah.
Same with Carrie Coon. She doesn't do it either.
That's right.
Really.
Anyway, sorry, I got kind of distracted on a tangent. So I started out really liking this movie. I like a good investigative journalism movie. I like those, you know, things of like Spotlight and that ilk where you've got, you know, an intrepid reporter who's, you know, finding connections that other people are missing and asking the tough questions and really, you know, digging into the story. But I think ultimately this, for me, just, although it has a compelling commentary about sexism and misogyny and like rape culture, I started to feel like it was just kind of a paint by numbers type of investigative journalism movie. And I got pretty bored toward the end. It just felt like it was running on too long and it ran out of steam. But I liked Keira Knightley. I think she's good as a journalist. I liked her in Official Secrets as well when she played a journalist. I thought she did a really great job. I like Carrie Coon. I think they were a good pair when they were working together on this story. And, you know, Chris Cooper plays a good asshole, so he was great as their
always
asshole
a good asshole
editor.
Robert John Burke, great as an asshole publisher.
Yes.
Yep, he was too. And then the guy who played Keira Knightley's husband with Morgan Spector, he was great as the initially supportive, but then quickly not supportive husband.
That unraveled rapidly.
Yeah, I know.
As
right?
I thought it would.
By the end, they get the title cards like her and her husband divorced. I was like, shocker.
Right?
Yeah, no kidding.
So, yeah, I liked this initially, but it just ran out of steam and felt very rote to me.
Megan.
I liked this. I thought this was really interesting. I also really like Keira Knightley. I think she's really fantastic here. Carrie Coon, I have talked about Carrie Coon obsessively on the show, off the show. I love Carrie Coon. She's one of my favorite actors. I think the film underutilizes her, which is unfortunate because she is a fucking powerhouse actress. Amazing. My favorite performance of hers is in The Leftovers. She's incredible. And The Nest, also incredible in that too. But she's really incredible in everything. And she's great here. And I agree with you, Evan. I really like their camaraderie. I like when they disagree. I like the way they work together. I think it's interesting to see their kind of divergent views on how to approach work and how Keira Knightley is coming in and she's, you know, she's kind of pushing her way into things, but also like one of the scenes where she goes in, she's like, oh, they're not letting anybody in. And Carrie Coon's like, come on, we're going in. She pushes her way in and she's like, hey Joe, how you doing? How's the family? You know, cause she's been on the scene for so long and she's been a journalist for so long. And it's just, it's nice to see their different perspectives because Keira Knightley hasn't had the opportunity because she keeps pushing for different stories that are not lifestyle stories. And, you know, she kind of makes this happen where she does this on her own time and she makes it happen where she's able to pursue this story in a much more official capacity. And I loved that. I loved seeing her career trajectory. I loved seeing them work together. I agree with you that the beginning of this film, the first half of this film, probably even 2/3, is a lot stronger than the end. I do think it kind of didn't lose steam for me in the same way because I was still very much captivated. But I do think that the end is not nearly as tight and as riveting as the other half of the film or other 2/3 of the film. I agree with you there.
Right.
I also agree with you that I think it's a really great depiction of the sexism that women in journalism face, especially in the 60s. I think it's also really smartly focuses on when Keira Knightley is talking to the mother of one of the murdered women, it very smartly focuses on her reaction to what's happening. And the film focuses on how women are scared and scared to be in their homes and they're locking their doors. And small moments like that, I think, are really important. And I also really like how the film is very clearly anchoring this into the larger problems of not just sexism in journalism and in the workplace, but also in misogyny that women face in society at large, that, you know, the Boston Strangler's not just one person. Like there's that, I think it's a really great scene when Keira Knightley is talking to the guy who's in prison who, you know, is talking, he's like, he's the guy who's the rapist who has confessed to doing all of these murders and it's probably not just him. And he's like, you know, he's just one guy. There are hundreds of him out there. There's endless numbers of him out there because there are so many men who are abusive and who are rapists and who are murdering women. And it's, you know, obviously it's horrific and gross. And I like that kind of extrapolating to a larger systemic problem. And I also like how this film shows how journalism is helping or not, you know, the case. And I really appreciate how this film shows the system failing these women who are murdered, particularly the police department. And I think it's just, I think it's done. There's a lot of smart choices. I think it's done really well. Yeah, I think it has some pacing issues by the end, and I wish it had been a little tighter. It did also remind me very much of other journalism films, of course. How could it not? It very much reminded me of Zodiac. It very much reminded me of She Said, especially She Said, because that's mm-hmm. also two yes. women reporters who are, you know, tracking down, you know, talking to women, trying to find out, you know, what's happening with a Harvey Weinstein, of course. But yeah, and so I think it's doing some smart things. I do wonder what a woman director, woman writer maybe would have done differently, like the choices that might have mm-hmm. been done differently, or maybe there wouldn't be any choices done differently, but it does kind of, I do think about that. But yeah, overall, I liked this. I thought it was great acting, good choices, good, solid writing. I liked it a lot.
Awesome.
Interesting. Well, here's where you're both wrong. No.
Yikes.
I did feel that it kind of ran out of steam in the last 30 minutes or so. But overall, I like this for, I think, the same reasons both of you did. Like a good journalism, shoe leather, pounding pavement, knocking on doors kind of story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I used to be that kind of reporter and now I'm not anymore. And let me tell you, it sounds like a lot of work, and it is, but it's so much fun. It's so fun to like go to the police station and be like, I need these. And they're like, nope. And then you have to go and find another way to get them. And you make friends with a cop, and then you buy him coffee, and then you buy him lunch. And then you're like, oh, and you can have these case files. Or when you go to court and you're like, I need to see the thing from this docket on this day. And they're like, nope, you can't have it. And you say, yes, I can. It's public record. And they're like, damn you, kid. And then they go and get it for you.
Yep. Got like me.
I just love that kind of shit. How, for example, it when you go to court and you want a file for a case, you can have them. Anybody can have them. And they try to not give them to you. And you're like, no, by law, this is a public fucking file. You have to give it to me. Give it to me. I love that shit. Anyway, at first I wasn't sure how this was going to go with the whole multiple, is there more than one Boston Strangler? But there is still mystery as to whether Albert DeSalvo did kill all 13 women. He's only linked to one officially, right. the last victim. And I read up about the Boston Strangler before and after I watched this. And these are all questions that people have been asking for decades. Were these two other guys involved, especially the creepy ex-boyfriend whose name I can't remember?
Daniel Marsh, I think.
And the guy who was having the affair with his
yes.
woman in his office, that I didn't realize that guy was implicated in her murder, you know, like in real life too. So there's all kinds of like things that this movie brought in sort of on a factual level that I was not aware of. And I really appreciated that angle. And I sort of appreciated this movie as sort of, I mean, I don't want to call it, you know, Zodiac light because they are different movies, but as far as like the obsession kind of taking over your life, they do both have that angle. Although I never get the feeling that Keira Knightley is obsessed the way that, in the bad way, shall right. we say, that that Jake Gyllenhaal's character is obsessed in Zodiac, because that does ruin his life. It did ruin
right.
his personal mm-hmm. life. Whereas this just seems like she was doing exactly what she thought she needed to be done, not because she was obsessed, but because it was the right thing to do.
Right.
And she was fighting an uphill battle against sexism and misogyny. And,
right.
you know,
and fighting on behalf of other women and feeling yes. like she had a responsibility to stick up for other women yeah. because no one else was doing it.
Right.
And I also appreciated that Jean's character had the other angle of like, listen, man, this shit just sucks.
Yes.
And this is what happens. Because you know what? That's a valid point of view too. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, she's been a reporter a decade longer than Loretta has been. And so even though she wasn't that much older in real life, but, and she's just like, look, man, I've just fucking seen too much. Just go on to the next story. And I appreciate that Alessandra Nivola's character has that thing where he's like, at what point are you going to let this take over your life
right.
when no one else gives a shit about your life?
Right,
you know,
right.
about what it's done to you. And I'm like, man, I get that too, you know?
I really love their relationship and their interactions and how he's highly frustrated yeah. with how his department is handling things and his kind of hands are tied. Like, it just was really refreshing to see. And I agree with you. Seeing all of those viewpoints was yeah. great.
And I appreciated how he was kind of like simultaneously pissed off about her doggedness, but also yes. kind of admired her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it was kind of like, kid, you're just another thorn in my side, even though you make a good point. It kind of had that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, he clearly respects her.
Yeah. And I also like how you see the progression over the course of the movie, how at first, like, no one will talk to her. And by the end, when she wants to go talk to the Cambridge cop, she brings those three cops coffees. And the next thing you see is, all right, Loretta, which file do you want to see?
Yeah.
And she's like, DeSalvo, which one? You know? And I just kind of love that she's become the official, like, she's just a reporter working the beat and we know her now, you know?
Totally.
I really dug that. And I also love how she just gets in the car and drives to Michigan on a hunch.
Yes.
Because real reporters do that kind of crazy shit all the time. They really do. You know? Like, this is, I have no illusions about what kind of reporter I was, but I was working on a story and I was told somebody I really needed to talk to might maybe possibly be at this place on this night. I called one of my friends, like, should I go down there? And he's like, yeah, jackass. So I went down there and the guy was there. And
cool.
People had told me he'll never talk to you. He'll never talk to you. He'll never talk to me. He talked to me on the record for 45 minutes. So, you know, nice. These things happen. You just got to fucking go do it. Which is what her husband didn't understand. I think this is why I love this movie almost, because I'm just like, this is what reporters do. People are like, you fucking want to see your name. No, what reporters don't like is being lied to and having doors shut in their face. I think that's why they do it more than anything else. Cause they're like, you're not going to tell me no, fuck you. I think that's what it is. I'm sure there are people out there, mostly entertainment reporters.
Oh,
who are just like, I so loved you in this movie and you were so awesome. That's me. but I think that there are a lot of reporters out there who just like want to get the story right because it's something that's important. And I like how this movie showed that.
I agree with you. And, oh, I'm sorry. I got excited.
I was going to say that I also appreciated that there were not Boston accents in there because I would have found it like,
distracting,
hard to get
horrible.
Past too if they were distracting if they were not done well.
Exactly. Just don't.
I feel
do
like you've either got to go super over the top or you got to do like really just barely do it. And I think they made the choice of not doing it at all. Really good one.
I agree. Except for obviously Nivola, who is doing a good subtle Boston accent, which most Boston accents are subtle, which people don't realize. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, no, and you know, it's funny listening to you two talk about it. And Dave, I love that you shared your personal experience because I think I have never been a journalist. So not having that experience, it's like, that's what it sounds like from people I've talked to. That's what it seems like this movie seems to get it right. So I love that you're like, no, this is accurate. This is how it is. Mm-hmm. Because I know as a writer, in different kinds of writing, in writing, like so often it's hard to get writing correct on screen. And so that even though I haven't been a journalist in the same, reporter in the same way or at all, it felt true and authentic. So I love that. But what I also love that Evan, you brought up the great point about how Loretta and Jean feel compelled, especially Loretta, they feel compelled to do this story because they have a responsibility to the women to do this. And you're absolutely right. But what simultaneously I love is that it's very clear that both Loretta and Jean are so devoted to their career, not just to help the women, but that they are passionate about writing and journalism and finding out the truth. And I really love that. I love that this film, while it does show their family life, it focuses on their careers and it's incredibly refreshing. And I just really, really loved that. And it really resonated to see two women who are like, no, I want to do this. This is what I'm passionate about. And I'm going to do a damn good job doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I dug that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just, aside from the slowly petering out thing, I don't really have much criticism of it. I'm just going to talk about how awesome it is to see reporting depicted accurately on screen.
You know, I guess the one kind of a weird defense of the film in a way, as far as petering out, is I wonder if the director made and the editor made that choice to make it feel that way. Like, I almost wonder if that's an intentional choice to peter out, because it's like, you know what? This is never going to stop. It's always going to happen. If it's not this guy, if it's not the Boston Strangler, it's another murderer. If it's not this person, it's someone else. It's just, it never stops. It's always happening. So I kind of wonder if it's like that kind of choice to make you feel that way.
I think it might be. And I've always felt that way about Zodiac, because sometimes I watch Zodiac about once a year and I'm just like, in those last 45 minutes, you're like, would you just get on with it? But then you're like, no, we're experiencing vicariously what happened to him, just getting worn down and worn out, but still having to go on.
Exactly.
Kind of the same way that Anthony Edwards' character in that reaches the end of his rope, like a third of the way through the movie, and he's like, I'm done, man.
Yes.
I got to watch my kids grow
up. Oh, you know? Anthony Edwards is so good in that.
Yeah. So I definitely, I think that, I hope it's a choice, because it does come off that way.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But I think we're so used to kind of a big bang, like this kind of grandiose, really powerful finale, for better or for worse. And so, yeah. So I think having it kind of like, you know, and, you know, not with a bang, but with a whimper, kind of, it feels like, oh, there should be more, but then, yeah. But anyway, I think it is the choice too.
And also it, the movie goes on. I kind of knew, but had to be refreshed. Like, DeSalvo was killed in like the early 70s. So they're working this story for at least a decade in this movie, you know? So, yes, shanked in prison.
Yikes.
Over a drug deal. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I dug it. I'm sorry that it petered out, Evan, a little bit, somewhat. But, you know, we all like a good detective story, it sounds like. I wish there were more detective stories out there.
Yeah.
Good ones, I mean. There are lots of detective stories.
That's true. But yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. Well, cool. Does anybody have any closing thoughts on Ye Olde Boston Strangler? That should be the name of every movie. Ye Olde Boston Strangler, the Ye Olde Leave, Ye Olde Leave. You know. Any final thoughts?
No.
Okay. How about you, Megan?
Just like Harry Coon should be in everything. I love her.
Yeah, she's really good.
And Keira Knightley is great. And I think sometimes I do this too. I think she's very underrated. I think that
totally.
I forget how good she is. And so it was nice to be reminded of that.
Well, she's also kind of moved away from like about a decade ago when she was kind of like movie star Keira Knightley.
Yes. Yes.
And she's always been, aside from doing like big things like Pirates of the Caribbean, she's always done like acting. Whereas I think, I don't know what the reason is. It seems very clear that she took a conscious step away from that. I don't know why she did. And now it seems like she's back in some, you know, bigger profile stuff. I think she was also making some choices film wise that were, one of those things was more interesting to her than it was to audiences generally. But like, why not? You've already been super fucking famous. Why not go ahead and do what you want to do? You know?
Exactly.
So there's that angle too. All right. I don't have anything else to say either. So let's do a recap, gang. So Leave, Megan.
No.
Leave, Evan.
See it.
Leave, Dave, yes. It's always going to be Leave. Yeah. So stupid, I'm sorry.
And I think that's on Shudder. People can see that on Shudder.
People can see that on Shudder, yes. And then Boston Strangler, we can see on Hulu. It sounds like, Evan, how do you feel?
I think I lean more towards see than not see. Mm-hmm.
And Megan, I know how you feel, but go ahead and tell us.
Yes, go see it.
I'm a go see it too. And that is Spoiler Piece Theater for this week. We want to thank our editor, Otto Klammer, for the great work you do each week. Thank you so much, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you find your podcasts. You can find us at our website. That's spoilerpiece.com. If you want to follow us on social media, we're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook, and we're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you'd like to email us for any reason whatsoever to tell us how much you love us or to tell us, no, we actually got, this is not what reporters do, Dave, you're dumb. Don't tell me I'm dumb, but you get the idea. Spoilerpiece@gmail.com is the email address. Or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
Leave us a voicemail. Let us know what you think of Reporters on Screen generally and Keira Knightley and Carrie Coon in this. And if you like the show, please rate and review us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece, or you can rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That really helps us get the word out. If you really like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. This week, we talked about a patron's choice, the 1999 teen rom-com She's All That, starring Rachel Lee Cook and Freddie Prinze Jr. We had a lot of fun with that. It was a great conversation. We love rom-coms, and we especially love the 90s, so it was a joy. And
it was.
Yeah, it was a joy. That's this episode of Spoiler Piece Theater. My name is Dave Riedel. I write for the Chicago Reader. I yap about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And if you want to follow me on social media, I'm at Dave Sees Movies on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd.
My name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of Your 80s Movie Guide to Better Living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
And my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I, too, am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
See you next week, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.